I'm Lauren Layfield, and you're listening to Your Next Podcast. This is the podcast that brings you a different series every single week, helping you to find your new favorite show. This week, I want to introduce you to something really different. This is Intersections, Los Angeles, and I'm willing to bet it's like nothing you've ever heard before. That sounds like a big statement, but really, the creators behind this have taken such a beautifully unique approach to putting it together. In the show, we hear conversations with 100 people from Los Angeles as they speak about the city, its culture, and its community. But it's just as much about what else we're hearing rather than just what we're being told. The whole thing is absolutely coated in the sounds of the city. You get completely wrapped up in overlapping layers of city life, like traffic and children playing and conversations just out of earshot. Honestly, I think the only word for it is beautiful. This is the second series. The first one was on Detroit, and it's a real joy. Here's Intersections, Los Angeles.
This is a Human Atlas podcast, a deep listening project where voices are heard and truth witnessed, a space where diverse narratives are honored and preserved. When I think about these stories, I think I hear and learn about other people that we don't hear about, how they think about the world. Each one of them have contributed something so profound to the human race, and to hear this resilience is so inspiring. When I think about home, I think about my mother's love, the way my mother loved me even before I was born. Marta Hernandez, who as an orphan in Tijuana used to dream about her family. And she didn't know how many kids she was going to have or anything like that, but she was already planning for us. And so she took a train as an immigrant, taking care of other people's children, and landed here in LA. She was already struggling and thinking about our future. We didn't have names yet, and we didn't have, you know, our own stories, but she planned her life and created something for our future even before we were born. So I'm so grateful to her. This is Intersections, Los Angeles, Vision and Wisdom from the City of Angels. Chapter 1, Birthplace. We make this our home.
If we ever learn to use the power of love, or the powers of love, because there are many powers of love, we would be astonished at ourselves and astonished at the kind of world we could create. Thirteen years of my life, I worked with Martin Luther King Jr. He and I are the same age. And we had in 1967 big plans for 1968 and 69. That got waylaid. We had helped to shape together a movement of nonviolence that began allowing the United States to be honest about itself, honest about its own visions, and honest about how we had to resolve a great number of issues, and that we could desegregate this nation of ours and break some of the barriers to our becoming the kind of people we can yet become. I was practicing nonviolence before I used the term. Practicing it from the point of view of the spirituality and teachings of the Hebrew Bible. And then acquired the language of nonviolence as I read Gandhi. He speaks about human life as sacred and all living things being connected in a single stream of life. We black folk have done in the United States, especially in the 20th century, we have seen our human rights, our human dignity, as the goals for achieving a fair and just society. We have seen our work as breaking down everything that is in contradiction to the sacredness and the dignity of our lives. You have in your mind and heart and hands the powers that can transform you and your life and your community. Most of all, you have to become an agency of love and compassion. And you cannot do that for others if you do not do it for yourself. You cannot do it for yourself if you do not do it for others. It's available. It's a gift of the universe. It will allow even the enemy the opportunity of transformation. It will create the powers that will cause the enemies of life to change, and it's not clear that we as a nation will get through this, no matter how much we want to, because means and ends must be in sympathy with each other. They must have bonds of understanding that will go in the same direction. So we disarm our hatred, disarm ourselves, and become a community. I am Jim Lawson. My life's work is as a pastor, helping a people pursue the gift of life.
I was a premature baby. And so I came into this life struggling to live, right? But I think that tenacity that I have comes from that, comes from, I will not perish. My grandmother made sure that all of the male children knew how to cook, knew how to clean, because she said, you're never going to make a woman do any of these things. And so when I think about my thirst for justice, right, my thirst for equity, I think about my grandmother. While we didn't have all of the material things, there was a whole lot of love, right? There was love around. There was love in the food. There was love in the story. There was love in the songs. I think being an Angeleno means everything to me. The city was born in the 1850s, 1854 or so. And it was founded by 46 individuals, half of which were Native and Latinos, and the other of which were Black former slaves, right? I feel like these two communities that are oftentimes underrepresented in just in terms of power are fundamental and core to everything we see around us. It inspires my work, right? In building community and building equity and taking back some of the currency that was placed in this city so long ago, right? And so, you know, I could talk about the issues. Yes, we're fighting for housing. We're making sure that everyone has a place to live. But I think above that and beyond that is bringing more people in and not pushing them away. So I feel that through storytelling and with storytelling, we can find those things that bring us together. Because oftentimes, the stories or narratives that are told to us are things that divide us, right? They divide us or they define us, right? Stories like art, it allows you to see beyond what's presented to you. It allows you to see a world that you would love to be in. It gives you that image that you can actually work towards and fight for and hopefully touch one day. And so that's where storytelling, that's where arts, that's where culture becomes important. People have rough days in Los Angeles. Like, it's a tale of two cities, right? And it costs me nothing to smile and say hello. We have to make the time to connect that way. It's the only way we're going to survive. Humanity is figuring out a society that isn't controlled in fear, but is buoyed by love. My name is Pete White, and I am human.
A lot of people kind of view labor organizing as this sort of drudgery, kind of like dark, kind of heavy. And it really isn't. It really is just connecting with people. It's just great to live in a world filled with connection. I live a life where I feel so positive all the time. There's more to this world than what is around me. And I think in the union, I was able to really find that. Because I was helping people take on the boss, part of doing that is you take on yourself. You know, you free yourself. So it helped me to free myself as well. What community means, when I first started, it used to be the union. And there used to be like a little sort of fence around us. And so that was my playground. But now, to me, it's like there are no boundaries. We want the workers' voice to help choose the right people so that our country can be saved, honestly. I mean, the democracy, in our view, is hanging by a thread. Representation means each person having their own voice. And my job as an organizer is to help them find the voice, take on the thing that's blocking them from standing up and helping them through that. Teaching people how to conquer fear. There's a certain humility that I think is really helpful in being in a union. Because the union is not about the individual, it's really about the collective. Unions are day-to-day a lot about democracy. Like, winning an appropriate wage for your work is a democratic principle. For families to be able to have health care and retire with dignity, with a pension, those are democratic principles. The union's given everything to me. It saved my life. We feel like so strong about doing anything. So we've really achieved a lot. It's local labor union, you know? Local labor unions aren't supposed to affect the national agenda, but I think that we have done that. And so I'm so proud to be part of it. My name is Susan Minato. I'm a union organizer. And my belief is that if workers exercise their voices in this country, we would have a better democracy. Representation means each person having their own voice.
My name is Stuart Kuo. I've fought for racial justice and equality for all of my life. And I feel that true representation of people of color and Asian Americans can only be achieved through solidarity with others. That's the only way the promise of America will come true. I grew up during the Civil Rights Movement. So my heroes were Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Cesar Chavez. So I tried to understand their experience. So I learned from an early period of time what other people were going through, Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders in the United States number over 23 million people. And in the 1970s, the number was little over a million. This rise is due to immigration, because in 1965, the immigration laws were changed. And so the remnants of the Chinese Exclusion Act were eliminated. The rise in Asian American and Pacific Islander populations is due to solidarity. It's due to blacks fighting for freedom, not only for themselves, but for all Americans. And so that solidarity is something we can never forget, and we have to learn about it. That was what I learned from the Civil Rights Movement, is you have to fight for justice. It doesn't come, they don't hand it to you. Of course, the United States stands for justice, but you have to fight for it. You have to struggle for it. It doesn't come automatically. And to this day, I understand you have to keep on fighting for it. True representation is not just your group speaking out. It's other groups speaking out for you and supporting you at the same time. The United States could not exist if each group only spoke out for themselves. Our history is full of cross-cultural solidarity, people fighting for representation for Asian Americans. So I find that Asian Americans need to speak out. There have been 11,000 hate incidents against Asian Americans just in the last 3 years. But blacks, whites, Latinx need to speak out for Asian Americans. We're not a perpetual foreigner. We're not the model minority. We're Americans who have struggled for justice, struggled to belong. That's what gives me hope. When other people speak out for you, then you have hope, because people are supportive. There's solidarity. There's justice that's possible. If you only speak out for your own group, that's necessary. It's important. It's significant. But that alone will not get you justice.
I grew from a urban landscape of Los Angeles, the neighborhood of Pico Union. The area was known and still known for its gang violence and poverty. People just scraping by, immigrants struggling and working 24/7
trying to put food on their plates and on their table and feed their families. My parents are immigrants from Thailand. My father came here first, pumped gas, worked for a garment factory, transporting textiles, and sent for my mom and myself and my sister. Having been raised in a impoverished environment of just relentless struggles and instability economically and financially and of hardships, I realized the struggle that I went through as a child and seeing my parents struggle and seeing my immigrant relatives struggle just to put food on the table and to make rent, that gave me the resolve and the drive to want to better the lives of others who are in similar situations and conditions. Civil unrest in Los Angeles occurred in 1992. I realized that that was really a manifestation of the historic socioeconomic inequities that LA had been going through and not investing in poor, minority, predominantly immigrant communities and letting them suffer blight and urban decay and then compounding that with police brutality. Of course, social unrest would erupt. In the aftermath of the second crisis, the Northridge earthquake in 94, TICC was born. For anything related to human trafficking and modern-day slavery, because we were the pioneer in the anti-trafficking movement with the first case of modern-day slavery that we handled in 95, that was just sadly the tip of the iceberg. To see them going from victims and voiceless to a powerful force for change, where they now are the authentic voice leading the movement to fight this scourge and this heinous crime known as human trafficking. That's the most egregious violation of basic fundamental human rights. And then seeing them out there fighting for not just their rights, but for justice to all people who've been violated in that way, it's just so inspiring. I'm Chanchanit Marcharel, born in Bangkok, Thailand, arrived here as an undocumented immigrant and been fighting for human rights all my life.
Mi nombre es Elba Serrano y yo trabajo para hacer justicia social aquí en Los Ángeles. My name is Elba Serrano. I'm a social and economic justice advocate, and my hope for the world is that immigrants feel at home here. I feel like I didn't really plant seeds until I came to Los Angeles. I'm an immigrant, so my mother brought me when I was really young, and I struggled to learn English, culture. Continuing to speak Spanish was really important to me because to me that feels like I'm closer to home and I'm closer to where I'm from. So when I moved to Los Angeles, I felt that culture and I felt that this was where I belonged. My mother was a hard worker. She raised four kids on her own. And to me, the power of women and being able to build her own business. She's always been self-employed and she's always figured out how to make ends meet. So to me, that has really instilled a sense of being self-sufficient no matter what circumstances were happening. and really figuring out how to share that knowledge with others that maybe haven't had the same advantages that I have. Growing up, you know, people just didn't want me to succeed. I think that every single time I just wanted to show people that I could and that I was strong enough and smart enough, and that was something that I felt like people were just prejudiced against immigrants, and I was always going to be that immigrant that was going to be in their face and succeed. I feel like the little part of me that was left in Mexico came back when I moved to LA, and I feel like this is it. This is where I want to be. That's why I'm an advocate. Ever since I was small, I've always been able to have that voice. I've been involved with the LA Street Vending campaign for several years now and just was really lucky to be able to celebrate a win. And last year, we were able to change the law. Now, street vending is considered an actual type of business that people can do here in California. It's been decriminalized, so that means that people are not going to be going to jail for that. So I think that even though I am an advocate, I am hearing other people's stories and I'm sharing their hardships, I feel that that's also my voice because I've also experienced all these different things. It's my voice along with their struggles. Being undocumented in this country, it's not easy, and it's really something that just, it's painful for a lot of our people, but they somehow manage and we make this our home.
My name is Alfred Lomas. I'm a peacemaker, and I help people realize that change is possible. I come from a long line of what's known as Tejanos, families that have been in Texas that predates the Texas being a part of the Union. I came to Los Angeles when I was a year old. I was the favorite of all my aunts. Their love really pierced a lot of darkness in terms of what I had experienced. My dad was an alcoholic and didn't work. My mom was depressed, so I never knew what it was like to be held. I understand the importance of the role that my aunts played in my life and being able to really hold me and tell me that they loved me as well. I know to date that that was my saving grace in my journey called life. At an early age, around about 9 years old, I began to smoke marijuana and drink. It was self-medicating. As I described, you know, fear and anxiety. And drugs was a very real part of my life in trying to cope with something that I wasn't even able to comprehend or describe. Just the hole in my soul that I was trying to fill with drugs was just too big. Survival and violence were oftentimes one and the same. Those gang folks that were older than I was were really my protectors. You know, it wasn't my mom, my dad, my teachers, or even police that protected me. It was really the older gang members that really looked out for me in a very meaningful way. So my recollection of law enforcement was an exclusive, you know, all-white entity that may as well have been the Klan. I mean, it was someone that was at war with the community. The communities that I work in, they're severely disadvantaged, marginalized. The areas that are disproportionately negatively impacted by violence, 7 out of 10 residents are high school dropouts. They experienced some of the larger gang wars. In 1 year, 40 people were killed in a 2.5 square mile area. And that doesn't include the casualties, which is probably 3 to 4 times as many. There's no one to advocate, to stand and champion for them as an individual. So this is about humanizing this perilous journey for many folks, being able to stand again in the gap and being able to look at not just a transactional experience, but a relational experience, because that's what this is about. It's not about checking a box. It's not about building. It's not even about programs. It's fundamentally about people. It's about connecting with people. It's about having compassion, and it's about humanizing these experiences. I stand firm on not just hope, but I stand firm on change is possible. I see a future that is bright. I remain positive, steadfast, that every act of kindness, every act of love, is able to impact and create change.
My name is Manju Kulkarni. I'm an immigrant. I'm an American. I'm a civil rights attorney. And I work every day to achieve justice for communities of color. From a very early age, I was aware of race. And it didn't really sit well with me how I was treated, how others in my community were treated, simply because of the color of our skin. So I fought that injustice even in small ways growing up, demanding attention, demanding equal treatment, and demanding fairness for not just myself, but for my friends and family members. In ninth grade, in a classroom Jeopardy class in which I was getting a lot of the answers right, another student asked, "Why is Manju getting all of these questions correct?" And the teacher said, "Because she's not American." So even though I sounded like everyone else, I dressed like everyone else, I understood that I was not perceived like everyone else. So I saw the law as a tool for good, as an opportunity to reshape America. With all of these different opportunities, seeing the commonalities across culture, across ethnicity, seeing the need for justice, seeing the emergence of anti-Asian hate in America, the discriminatory treatment, the interpersonal attacks, I worry for our nation. What does it mean to have equality, to have equity, and to have justice? And how important we need to continue to fight for that, because we can't rest on our laurels. It wasn't just in the civil rights movement. It is a constant struggle and fight. For me, justice is about strengthening democracy. When we talk about democracy, and a multicultural democracy, it means we're all in this together. It's not a spectator sport. So we've got to put our cleats on, we've got to practice, we've got to stretch, and we've got to go out on the field and do that hard work. And we have to play for an entire game, and that game is our future. I don't have enough years on this planet to speak with every single person and convince them that my view is the right one. But what I can do is advocate for changes in the law that have impacted a multitude, thousands and sometimes millions of individuals. And for that, I'm grateful to have that opportunity. And that's the change I think we need to address racism. I am hopeful that in this struggle, we can win battles, and that ultimately, we can win the war. We can win the war. We can win the war.
My name is Alberto Retana. I believe in uniting our people for freedom, for justice, and for liberation. I'd like to believe that I'm my ancestors' wildest dreams. I'd like to believe that I am a continuance of their struggle. All too often in our country, the childhoods of communities of color gets disrupted through violence, through its contact with racism and white supremacy. And while I lived a very happy, joyful life as a child, I was confronted early on with racism. It was through the work of other folks, other black students and other Latino students, that I saw the power of what could happen when everyone came together. Our belief in liberation, our belief in building a society that could actually be different, was formed at that time. And it's because of that that I think that I love to organize. It's not easy because this country is set up in a way to divide us, to have us fight against each other, to blame each other, all while the 1% get fat and laugh and not even have to witness the destruction that's being created by the inequality. We live in a deeply divided country, but I think South Central is a deeply united community. And I think the future of unity and the future of change is going to come from the people of South Central because of our commitment to unity, our commitment to work across race, to work across class, to work across neighborhood. It's only through struggle and only through fighting and not giving up that we can find a better day. That's the example we want to leave for our children and for our children's children, that we can have the sense of pride for my generation in the same way that I have for the previous generations that came before me. That's what's great about community. You come together, you realize you're not alone. The ally of the future is in our hands. We have to fight and fight and fight. And it's not all just going to come in the form of a policy change or a new elected official or how folks are feeling on the street every day. It's going to take all of it, every single one of us having to stretch ourselves. I do believe that the younger generation's commitment to justice is certainly light at the end of the tunnel, but the tunnel seems far at the moment. I'm really proud of the Los Angeles, the resilience and the struggle and the fight and the model. I think everything that we do in LA by way of progressive change is a model for the country. At the end of the day, it's the ability to achieve purpose. And if we have the ability to achieve purpose, we can walk with freedom and truly breathe liberation.
I'm Dolores Huerta, and as an organizer, I worked to make people understand that they have power to improve their lives and improve their communities by coming together and taking direct, collective, nonviolent action. I was taught as a very young child, if you saw someone in need, you had an obligation to help them. So when I learned about organizing, that completely changed my world. I found out that if people organized at the grassroots level, that you could really make changes. I'm identified as being the co-founder of the United Farm Workers with Cesar Chavez. But our first meeting where we decided to form the union was here in Los Angeles. We had both attempted to form an organization of farm workers union. We had both tried to organize farm workers. I did it in my hometown of Stockton, California. Cesar did the same thing in Oxnard. I turned my group over to this other union. It fell apart. Same thing happened to Cesar. So Cesar called me to his home and he said to me, farm workers will never have a union unless you and I do it. And when he said that, I thought he was joking. And I started laughing. He said, no, I'm very serious. And so we started organizing farm workers. house by house, family by family. Our plan was to organize from 1962 to 1968, but the Filipino workers went out on strike. They were being beaten up. They were in labor camps where they cut off the water and the gas so they couldn't even cook their meals. We voted to support them. So we decided to do a boycott of grapes. That was the very famous Delano grape strike of 1965. And we took a group of farm workers, and we had these young student volunteers. They went everywhere. They went to Canada. They went to Michigan. They went to Florida. They went to Texas, you know, Ohio, everywhere. Well, in order to win the boycott, of course, we had to ask a lot of people to support us. And of course, when we won the boycott, there were over 17 million people in the United States that stopped eating grapes. When we think of the workers, working people, they are the majority of the people in the world and in our country, and yet they're under constant attack. I think that's a reflection on society, that we do not honor people that work with their hands and that they are the ones that need to get paid a living wage, because workers are the foundation of our society. When people are expected to use their life's force and energy to make other people rich, that is a legacy of slavery. As human beings, we would never have survived on planet Earth had we not taken care of each other. And that, to me, is what humanity is, understanding that we are a human family, that we all come from the same origin, that we all come from Africa, that we are all Africans of different shades and colors. I use this quote a lot: el respeto al derecho ajeno es la paz. Respecting other people's rights is peace. So that's what humanity is: respecting other people's rights, respecting other people's choices, to have equity in our lives. People have power, but they don't understand that they have power. They need to not only understand, but they need to use their power by participating in civic life. And that's what we do as organizers: convince them that they have power.
The LA of the future is in our hands.
And we make this our home.
I am Marta Gonzalez. If these stories inspired you, please visit the exhibition, Alta, A Human Atlas of a City of Angels, at the LA Central Library from January 13, 2025. Intersections Los Angeles was created by Marcus Lyon for the Human Atlas platform, inspiring change through art, science, and storytelling. All interviews and recordings were conducted in Los Angeles in 2023. The producer and sound designer is Sarah Miles. Engineering and voice direction by Matt Hill of Rethink Audio, with LA Studio production by Quetzal Flores. Original music by Brian Eno, Marta Gonzalez, Rudy Ortega Jr., Yulisa Maqueos, Rebella Sen, and Sandino Gonzalez Flores. Production by the Human Atlas team: Joe Briggs Price, Camila Pastorelli, and Sam Musto. Design by Jim Sutherland and Ethan Brown at Studio Sutherland. Intersections was created for PST Art, Art and Science Collide, in collaboration with executive producers Tom Lerner and Nicole Onishi of the Getty Conservation Institute, and supported by John E. and Louise Bryson. And a special thanks to all Angelinos, the people of our city. Your spirit and voice make this work possible. You can order a copy of the book, Alta, A Human Atlas of a City of Angels, at ahumanatlas.com. And we're so grateful that you've taken the time to listen to our Angelino stories. See you back here next week. Hasta la próxima.
Do you see what I mean? All that sound just surrounds you until you're almost put into a trance. It's really amazing. The rest of the series is coming out weekly right now, so search for Intersections in your podcast app to hear more just like that. And you can find all my recommendations, along with news, reviews, and much more, on Podcast Rex at www.podcastrex.com. That's www.podcastrex.com.